When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell and our Summer Arts Coordinator Genevieve Hinch. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, providing an update on the future of the Homelessness and Addiction Recovery Treatment Hub.
At their last meeting, council once again tackled the uncertain future of Kingston's addiction services. It was announced in March that Consumption and Treatment Services, CTS, which has operated alongside the Integrated Care Hub since 2018, would close effective September 30th, 2026. The CTS serves hundreds of vulnerable residents annually, preventing overdose deaths and averting emergency room visits. This closure is due to the provincial decision to cut funding to CTS sites across Ontario, effective June 13th. After much uncertainty about what would come next, the province announced on April 10th that a new Homelessness and Addiction Recovery Treatment Hub, or HART Hub, will be established in Kingston. Provincial HART Hubs will provide services related to addiction recovery, primary care, and supportive housing. However, unlike the CTS model, HART Hubs require abstinence as a condition of access and will not provide services like drug checking, needle exchange, and safe consumption. Counselors and local experts alike have acknowledged there will be significant gaps upon the closure of CTS. In a lengthy meeting in March, council began discussing what the CTS closure means and how the city will navigate it. At their meeting on Tuesday, May 5th, now with the knowledge of a confirmed HART Hub from the province, council continued the conversation. A motion from the Arts, Recreation, and Community Policies Committee came before council, laying out a multi-part response to the looming closure of Kingston's CTS site. Two pieces focus on understanding the impact. Council asks the city's chief administrative officer to report back on what the provincial decision will mean for the Integrated Care Hub. Everything from the building lease to programming. Staff are also being directed to work with Kingston Community Health Centers to collect detailed data on harm reduction services to paint a clearer picture of what's being lost. There's also a communications component aimed at making sure residents know where to turn. The city will work with local partners to share information about available supports once the CTS site closes. The most notable parts of the motion are two more action-focused items. First, council's directing the city solicitor, alongside the mayor and chief administrative officer, to formally assess whether the situation warrants a municipal declaration of emergency. That assessment is expected back in the third quarter of 2026. Second, council's committing $350,000 in new funding to support community-driven solutions. The money will go toward pilot projects proposed by local organizations, with a focus on new harm reduction initiatives that can potentially operate at a lower cost. Councillor Brandon Tozzo added one more item to the list with an amendment: that council formally opposed the provincial government's decision to close CTS.
I think that there's a substantial amount of work on the financial side has been done, but I think it's important that we send a clear message to the community where we as a political body stand on this. This is, closing of this will cause harm. It will affect a vulnerable community. And I want us to just make it a position that we fully oppose the closure of the CTS in the city of Kingston.
Councillors Gary Osteroff and Jimmy Hassan were opposed to the amendment. Osteroff was supportive of the new HART Hub model as a replacement, and Hassan pointed to the provincial responsibility for healthcare matters.
I can't support this. I believe that the heart and with addiction recovery, I believe that it's the better way to go. So I can't support this.
I think it's not a good strategy to just oppose their decision. That's their department. That's their responsibility. So we have to live with it, but we'll continue to support whatever, however we can do. I will not support this amendment.
Mayor Brian Patterson, who seconded the amendment, spoke to the importance of CTS's place in the addiction care ecosystem in addition to a heart hub.
I think it was Councillor Ridge, who is not here tonight, who I think put it very eloquently when we first debated this, said what we really need is a CTS and a heart hub. This is not about suggesting that we're not in favor of the heart hub. The heart hub is great. It's a huge new investment into the community that will offer hope and recovery for those that are struggling with addiction. I'm a huge supporter of it, and I can hardly wait to see it up and running. What I'm suggesting, and I think that what has been discussed, is that ideally you would have both so that you can have a place where you can meet people where they're at. Obviously, not everybody is ready to immediately move into recovery, so allow them to be able to access harm reduction services and then be able to transition into the heart hub. Ideally, I think you could see both of those working together. So this is really, in my view, I was happy to second this because I think it just shows on principle that if it was up to us, we would want both. It's not in any way poking at the province, where I think we've been very vocal that we've been helpful or very grateful for the heart hub. But I think it still is very clear that ideally you would have both. So for that reason, I'm happy to second this amendment.
The amendment passed with a vote of 8-2. Councillors Ostroff and Hassan opposed. When discussion returned to the full motion, Councillor Jeff McLaren spoke in support, especially noting the importance of the $350,000 in funding for new projects and the opportunity for change.
This came as a result of ideas that were coming from the public that could help support the city's harm reduction efforts at a lower cost. And since we are looking for ways to save money, it seems that this is an opportunity to see if that could happen. That's the whole point of this pilot project. Take ideas from people on the front lines that want to start new enterprises, social enterprises that actually benefit people in a new and different way. I think this is a great way forward, and I hope that it succeeds because what we've been doing up until now seems to be the situation seems to be getting worse regardless of what we continue to throw the money we throw at it. So it's time to find some new ideas, and hence the word new community groups and new proposals.
Councillor Connie Glenn also spoke in support of the motion, with hope for the future of services in Kingston, but still bracing for the impact of the CTS site closure.
I'm very heartened to see this motion coming forward, and I hope that it's going to pass. I think I feel a positive wind here. I do believe that pilot projects may lead to some gold nuggets. We have deep-seated challenges here, and removal of support for the CTS is eventually going to hit this community really hard. So I think one of the things that needs to be reiterated here is that removal of these sites in other municipalities has led to an increase in overdoses. It's led to increased emergency room visits. Hamilton's one of the places that's been mentioned a few times that's seen this sort of thing happen. So I'm glad that we're going to do what we can to bridge the gap and hopefully preserve some services and see where we go from there. But in the short term, I think this is the right step forward for us. And then we'll have to have more conversations about how we get those other gaps filled and how we get the province to fill them for us, because we can't continue this way as we've seen with our budgetary pressures.
In the end, the motion carried with a vote of 9-1. Councillor Gary Ostroff opposed. Addiction and Mental Health Services KFLNA will be the lead agency for the new Heart Hub services. For now, the city clarified in a release that Kingston Community Health Center's Street Health Center will continue to provide primary care, addiction treatment, and harm reduction services. Low barrier services like the Access and Support Center, Rest Zone, and other integrated care hub programming will continue through and after the transition to a Heart Hub.
Hopefully things will not deteriorate any further with the interventions that we're putting in place.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Now over to Dinah Jansen with a story by Michelle Dory Forrestel, LJI reporter for The Kingstonist, about Napanee Council's decision to switch from the Community Foundation grant to an in-house funding model.
Thank you, Jesse. Greater Napanee Council has finalized its move away from a long-standing partnership with the Lennox and Addington Community Foundation, opting instead to bring its community grant program fully in-house, while resolving lingering questions about what happens to roughly $30,000 already held by the foundation. At its meeting on Tuesday, April 28th, Napanee Council approved amendments to its community grants policy and endorsed a revised approach that will see those funds distributed locally through grants rather than returned to the town. The decision builds on a Tuesday, March 20, 2026 council resolution that directed staff to exit the foundation agreement and request the return of approximately $29,800, money originally contributed as part of a municipal endowment. What council did not yet have clarity on when they voted in March was whether the funds could be legally returned at all. The resolution directed staff to retrieve the money, but subsequent review found it had been contributed as a charitable endowment, a structure that typically does not allow withdrawals once funds are committed. That left council with a choice: continue pursuing a complex and uncertain withdrawal process or find an alternative. Instead, they endorsed what CAO Matthew Grant described as an elegant solution. Under the revised approach, the town will still exit the foundation agreement and redirect future funding into its own community initiatives fund, but the existing $30,000 will be distributed by the foundation as local grants, likely in 2027. The change avoids the need for the town to manage the funds as a formal trust, which would involve ongoing investment oversight, reporting requirements, and administrative costs. The policy amendment also simplifies the way the town delivers grants more broadly by consolidating multiple funding streams into a single municipally controlled program. The shift reflects both practical and policy considerations, according to the town. In March, staff described the dual system with funding flowing through both the community foundation and the town as effectively a duplication of services. At the same time, demand for the town's own community initiatives fund has already outpaced available resources. During its first intake, the program received more than $100,000 in applications, but was able to distribute only $15,000. Redirecting the town's annual $10,000 contribution from the foundation was expected to increase available funding by roughly 25%. The two systems also operate under different rules. As a registered charity, the Community Foundation is limited to funding qualified recipients, such as registered charities. The town's program, by contrast, can support a broader range of community initiatives, including grassroots and informal groups that would not otherwise qualify. That flexibility was a key factor in Council's decision to consolidate funding under municipal control. While the financial impact of the April 28th decision is relatively modest, it marks a broader shift in how Greater Napanee approaches community funding. With the policy changes now approved, the town will phase out its relationship with the Community Foundation, redirect future contributions into its own fund, and allow the remaining endowment to be distributed locally through grants over the coming years.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Coming up next, we have Genevieve Hinch reading a story by Keith Dempsey, LJI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, about a $5,000 Enbridge grant that will support youth programming at the Gananoque Public Library.
Thank you, Jesse. A $5,000 grant from Enbridge will support youth programming at the Gananoque Public Library, helping sustain a local drop-in initiative aimed at providing a safe and inclusive space for young people. The funding will go toward the Gananoque Youth Drop-In Program, which is led and delivered by the RNJ Youth Services in partnership with the library. Town officials say the program offers a welcoming environment where youth can connect, build skills, and get access to support in the community. Representatives from Enbridge and the RNJ Youth Services were in Gananoque on April 29th for a small ceremony recognizing the contribution and highlighting the impact of the program. The drop-in initiative is supported through a partnership that includes the Town of Gananoque, the Gananoque Library Board and staff, and the YMCA of Eastern Ontario. Officials say the investment will help strengthen programming for local youth while supporting efforts to create inclusive community spaces. The town noted the program plays an important role in fostering opportunities for young people and contributing to their overall well-being.
And thank you to Genevieve Hinch and Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Ted Evans, LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, with a story about the start of construction on a new pump track in Amherstview.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Construction of the new pump track at Loyalist Park in Amherstview will begin on May 11th, with an expected completion date of July 30th. Thanks to a confidential donation of $500,000, the construction of the pump track will not impact the township's budget. It will be developed at no cost to Loyalist Township other than staff time to oversee it. The entire project, including the skate park, is estimated to cost approximately $1 million and is being completed in two phases. Phase 1 is the construction of the pump track, including a skate bowl, while Phase 2 will include the completion of the remaining skate park features, subject to securing additional funding. Council heard a presentation in June of 2025 from New Line Skate Parks, an engineering firm with expertise in skate park construction. Now with approval, the company is beginning construction. A public consultation process is currently taking place on the township's website. Vice President and Director of Business Development with New Line Skate Parks, Trevor Morgan, spoke about the benefits of the skate parks and pump tracks they build and the one they're looking to build in Loyalist Township.
Very integrated, green space, connections to pathways, color, texture, art installations. That can be very exciting to put a signature, I guess, of the community within the architecture of the park, even through different lighting schemes, if that's something that's desired. And then accessibility, you're likely to have folks from the adaptive community who would like to ride this park. So yeah, every park has its story, and we hope there's a story to be told here for the township.
Morgan noted the potential boost in tourism the facility could bring.
The network of these parks are being created in communities across Canada and across Ontario, and there's a large population that will want to experience each different unique park and communities, and they'll purposely travel around, stop in these communities, visit, spend money at local businesses, maybe even spend a night. I know when I was 12 years old on a family trip and I was an avid skateboarder, I could be very influential to spend an extra night in a community if they had that one skate park.
Morgan spoke about the potential of events at the facility as well.
You're likely to have user groups and community groups that will say, hey, we would love to have some level of organized events there that could be lessons nights, some community-based contests and so forth. And so we really try to design a modern park with that in mind.
Councillor Paul Proderick spoke about neighboring communities and their skate parks, as well as what a new one in Amherstview could do for the community.
I think the closest one to us is Napanee, and then you go to Picton's got a great site, but again, it's probably 20 years old now. I think it becomes a hub for gathering, and it fits into the master recreation plan. Also, an opportunity to add something to the community, and I think we haven't had a recreational facility addition in well over, I'm going to say, 40 years. And again, it's just through the leadership of a community member who wishes to help out in times where we don't have a lot of money to do a lot of things that we'd like to do.
Councillor Jake Ennis spoke about the donation and choice of the donor.
It's a very generous donation. We're really appreciative to for the donation, and I think the donor's chosen well. It's a amenity that with an amenity that focuses on youth, and one that I think will be very well used.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend showed his appreciation towards the donor, as well as what the project will do for youth in the area.
It's incredibly generous and provides an amazing opportunity for us, and to appreciate the particular kinds of youth that something like this can engage, you know, based on the whole lifestyle and culture that goes with it. Not one I claim to understand. I think it's not just, you know, youth engagement writ large in some sort of big broad context. This is something quite specific that I think will cater to members in our community that otherwise don't have a facility like this.
Councillor Carol Parks noted the activity at Napanee's skate park.
I do go by the one in Napanee quite regularly, and it is a gathering place. You see all sorts of demographics and ages and different usage of it. So I fully support this.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn spoke about the progress in access to skateboarding facilities and shared a story from his youth.
I was in my teens on probably a $10 skateboard trying to go down the largest hill where I lived at the time, called Big Hill, and with blind corners. It's come a long way from when I was young. I've actually seen some of the, like Madoc, they have a nice one there. I remember when they were building the first phase, and I was kind of like, what is going on in there? And now to see it now, it's been developed into the whole park is basically devoted to this now. And it's packed all the time. It is something that is what I believe will be well used. And this is a great opportunity, I think, for Loyalist Township to be able to provide another amenity new to the community that will be used, very well used, I believe, for an extended period of time.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Now over to CFRC's own Jesse Bell with the CFRC Sports Report.
Thank you, Dinah. The Kingston Grenadiers Youth Football Club will kick off their 2026 season on May 16th in Ottawa. A not-for-profit, volunteer-run youth development program, the Kingston Grenadiers played their inaugural season in 2004 as part of a U18 AAA football organization known at the time as the Ontario Varsity Football League, since renamed to the Ontario Summer Football League. After five seasons of strictly U18 play, the club expanded to offer a U16 program in 2009. After a temporary stint as the Kingston Junior Gales in 2022, the team went back to the Grenadier branding in 2023 and also began to expand its services, fielding U14 and U12 teams. Over 200 players will suit up for the Grenadiers in 2026 across their four age cohorts, and of those 200, roughly 10% will be coming from low-income backgrounds. The coaching staff is composed of volunteers, many recruited from the high school coaching ranks in the area. While the club struggled to find success in the 2010s, the program has turned a corner in recent years, consistently fielding championship-caliber teams in multiple age brackets. Expectations are particularly high for the 2026 U18 squad after a 7-0 regular season in 2025. Six players from the U18 Grenadiers were selected to play in the Football Ontario Red Black Weekend, including defensive end Adrian Stangetta, running back Declan Cowan, and H-back Tom Alliver. The 2026 home opener will be played on May 23rd at Richardson Stadium, starting with the U12 team at 11 a.m. and concluding with the U18 team at 6:30 p.m. Tickets can be purchased from the Richardson Stadium box office on game day. In other Kingston sports news, Queens offensive lineman and the second overall pick in the CFL draft, Nicholas Hennig, has announced that he has signed a contract with the Las Vegas Raiders of the National Football League. Hennig is the sixth player in program history to make the jump to the NFL. He joins running back Jim Young, 1965, running back Hino Lillis, 1966, who was also a practice squad player for the Dallas Cowboys, offensive tackle Mike Shad, a 1986 first-round draft pick for the LA Rams, the only U Sports player ever selected in the first round, Brad Elberg, 1993, who played for the Philadelphia Eagles, and most recently, offensive tackle Matt O'Donnell, who in 2011 signed with the Cincinnati Bengals. It is unlikely that Hennig will dress for the Raiders in 2026, but he is a shrewd developmental signing for a team that is talent-starved on the offensive line, who also recently drafted a new quarterback with the first overall pick in the 2026 NFL Draft. Whether it's Vegas or Toronto, there is no doubt that the Milton, Ontario product has a bright future ahead of him in professional football.
And thank you again to Jesse Bell for that update, and also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Tuesday, May 12th, 11 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel a lot warmer, close to 18 degrees in the bright sunshine. It is going to cool down quite a bit overnight, however, as we will have a daytime high of just 11 degrees on Wednesday, May 13th, with a 68% chance of precipitation. It will stay consistently cool going into the following Thursday, May 14th. 11 is your high, but with a 60% chance of precipitation, it's going to feel closer to 7 degrees. It is going to get nice for the weekend, though, folks. Friday, May 15th, daytime high of 14 degrees. Beautiful sunshine, making it feel closer to 17. Saturday, May 16th, daytime high of 16, feeling like 20 in the sunshine. That's more like it for the month of May. Sunday, May 17th, daytime high of 17 degrees, feeling 17 degrees in the sunshine. And then kicking off next week, we've got a run of warmer weather starting with Monday, May 18th, daytime high of 18 degrees, feeling like 20. Now, that is what I'm talking about.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.